This podcast is produced by the Center for Deployment Psychology at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. In addition, references to any specific companies, products, processes, or services does not necessarily constitute or imply endorsement by the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. Welcome to CDP's podcast, Practical for Your Practice,
where we give you actionable intel to support what you do, one colleague to another.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Practical for Your Practice. Yeah. I am Jenna Ermold, and that, yeah, you heard, is my fabulous co-host, Dr. Kevin Holloway. How's it going, Kevin?
Going well. I'm just so excited that I had to say something over the top of that intro. So
I got to introduce you that way. It's pretty cool. We have an episode today that I'm very excited for, and I feel like I'm going to learn a lot and get a really important update. But before we do that, guess what we have? That's right.
Go for it.
A listener question.
Yes.
I know. Pretty exciting.
Keep them coming.
Keep them coming in that speak pipe. Leave us a message. But this question is coming in from Kirsten from Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And her question is, are there any misconceptions about evidence-based psychotherapy that you'd like to clear up for your listeners?
Ooh.
That's a really nice tee up.
Yes, it is.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions about evidence-based psychotherapies that I would like to clear up.
How long do we have?
I know. So I'm going to take a quick wag and then you can. I think one misconception is they're rigid and inflexible. Yeah. And I think one thing we always like to emphasize is case conceptualization, what your client is bringing into the room, the nuances to their presentation really shape how we engage in an EBP. Mm-hmm. And we want to use their specific examples and what's keeping them stuck to really sort of shift, you know, how we're examples of what we're doing or exercises that we're assigning. So I think that flexibility piece is huge. What's yours?
I think mine is similar to that. I think sometimes evidence-based psychotherapies or protocol therapies, but I mean, evidence-based psychotherapies are usually protocols, get a bad rap because there's this perception that we're talking about a checklist of say this thing, give that form, show them this picture, this diagram, whatever. Yeah. And if you check all the boxes in the right order, that you've done a good evidence-based psychotherapy. And of course, I mean, it comes down to that sense of rigidity. There's a lot more flexibility here. Like these protocols are protocols, not as in a script, but as in a make sure you hit these things, or this is kind of a general approach to
scaffolding.
Scaffolding. Kind of general approach to approaching this thing and dealing with the specific personal individual nuances that the person brings into the room. But all the content is from your client, of course. So, yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we like to keep those short and sweet. We could talk about lots of different nuances of those, but
so that could be its own episode.
I don't want to take any more time away from our amazing guest that we have today. We would love to welcome to the podcast Dr. David Cooper, who Woo-hoo! Is the executive director of Therapists in Tech, and very importantly, one of our fabulous presenters in our annual evidence-based psychotherapy conference. So welcome to Practical for Your Practice, David. Do you prefer Dave or David?
I just don't call me late for dinner. I'll answer to just about anything.
Okay. All right. Excellent.
But no, it's so great to be here with you both. I love talking about tech and obviously, you know, it's been a big part of my career. So I love sort of demystifying, talking about it with folks in our career. We're not necessarily a tech forward career, right? We got into this to deal with people. And, you know, even those of us who are more data minded aren't necessarily even cutting edge technical folks. So always good to help serve as that bridge to what's going on in like the larger digital health space or technical issues and things like that back into psychology.
It's really true. Like I get the sense from a lot of colleagues that there's this almost like a little bit of fear, if you know, maybe fear is too strong, but some nervousness, some hesitation about engaging with tech. Just either, you know, this nervousness that I don't know enough about it, I'm going to mess it up, or I'm not going to know how to use it well, or worse, this is going to replace me, or it's going to unethical and it's going to do a bad job. Like lots of kind of, misconceptions we were talking about with EVPs, but around tech too.
Before we go any further, I do want to kind of like ground us in
Yes.
everybody.
Yep.
So our
Back it
topic
on
for today, because we're so excited we're already
up.
talking about it, is the evolving role of AI and mental health. And a really important role that David serves is he's a member of APA's Mobile Health Tech Advisory Committee, right? I get that sort of correct. And you recently attended a meeting, and our discussion is going to center around some of the big topics that you all grappled with in that committee. So that I just wanted to get that out before we get too much further.
No, yeah, it was really great to just sit down with folks and talk, even at a high level, but then even getting in onto the practical issues of how do we do this? How do we approach some of this stuff? And that's what I love talking about. I want to talk about with you guys today. I want to talk about at the upcoming, conference, all about how to kind of adjust to these new normal things of incorporating technology into practice.
Maybe not even just adjust, but how do we best thrive with it? Because I think like Kevin's fear-based comment, I think Kevin and I have had the opportunity to be to go to a couple interesting conferences, a little more around this, but even when we think about our approach to this, we can come at it with like, oh God, this AI is here and I don't want any part of that. But it is here and it's already here and it is going to move forward. How can I best be a part of that? How can it best serve what I'm doing? How can it best serve, more importantly, my clients, right? Like that's the whole bottom line, a huge part of it. So
Do we want to set the stage here a little?
yeah, that's what I was thinking, the definition.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
Well,
want
and because, I think like because there's that fear and hesitation or resistance from some folks, not others. I mean, we certainly have colleagues that are also very, forward facing and jumping in with both feet kind of a thing. But let's kind of just set the foundation here. Like when we're talking about artificial intelligence, what are we talking about? Because I think sometimes people, their first thought is ChatGPT, but their second thought is Skynet, and ChatGPT is going to become Skynet and ruin the world. Like, what are we really talking about here?
I'll give you the quick overview. This is your quick lesson in sort of AI for you and your listeners. So AI itself covers a number of different topics, right? Like you said, Kevin, the one that we're most familiar with is GPT and the generative AI creating something new. There's also, deep learning, machine learning, robotics. Like if you see the cool robots from Boston Dynamics, like that's AI. And really, at a high level, kind of what we're talking about is taking data, turning it into numbers, and then using sort of neural nets and sort of basically a lot of vector and matrix math that I honestly tried to avoid touching by becoming a psychologist,
It's
but
gonna say.
using that to do things. You can think of generative AI as like, and ChatGPT as like fancy autocomplete, or, image recognition is another one. And pattern matching, is this a hot dog? Is this not a hot dog? How do I kind of use, again, take all this data, turn it into numbers, and use it in a way that works with models to match patterns, to like do different things. And that's really all of AI at a very high level. If you want to jump down to maybe the next level, when we're talking about something like ChatGPT, why is it like fancy autocomplete? What is it really doing under the hood? I mean, the GPT, let's break that down. Generative, let's make something new. Pre-trained, I'm going to use a big body of data to help build whatever model I'm working on. Transformer, something that combines like a specific kind of thing of like a neural network with an attention model. What that means is there's like these two steps of, well, let's take it all the way back. Start with data. We're going to take that data and we're going to transform it into like numbers or tokens, right? We do a bunch of that fancy matrix math, turning into vectors and all the, eigenvectors, all the stuff you glazed over in statistics in graduate school for the more clinically trained of us. And what that does is it helps separates out words like jump versus words like skip or hop or fall. Right, that's what we're started doing at that level. And then the next level down is an attentional Bayesian kind of reasoning layer, which is using a more semantic analysis. Do I mean jump the physical activity, or do I mean jump like, oh, I jumped, I a shock. You know, you rinse and repeat that a few times, and that's how we get the output of ChatGPT. That's how it sort of predicts what goes in that next word.
I think that's a really big point, right? And we heard Jenna and I heard this a lot in the conferences she was referring to, is that with a lot of this generative AI, it's another way to think of it is it's just kind of like, what's the next probable word that goes here after this string of words? It's not necessarily thinking in the way that we think of thinking in humans. It's kind of like you said, really, really advanced, you know, fill in the blank, right? And it doesn't necessarily pull meaning from that, but it sure feels like it to us because we look at its output, we are recognizing patterns, we're maybe even anthropomorphizing it a little bit, but you know.
Okay, but gentlemen, my question is, what in the world does this have to do with psychology? Like, what in the world? Everything you just described, and by the way, I never knew what GPT meant, so thank you. How in the world does this relate to what we do as clinicians? And like for our listeners who are in private practice and doing their thing, what does it mean? Like, what's the meaning for us? Why is it
Why
relevant?
should I care?
Yeah,
Why
why
should
should
I
I care?
care?
Why should I care, David?
No, it's funny because I'm prepping a different talk with this very, you know, around this very topic, and that's one of my slides is why should psychologists care? And then, you know, I asked the same question, why do psychologists care about the internet? Why do psychologists care about having a web page? Why do psychologists care about knowing how to use Microsoft Word? None of those things are inherently part of being in the room with a client. Do they make the work around that easier by helping us get clients, helping us do the day-to-day work? Absolutely. And I think that's the way I want our field to start using, looking at some of these tools, not as something that is necessarily going to replace them, but how do I use this as part and parcel of my tool set? How does this help make me a better psychologist? How does this help me help my clients better?
And that's the end. I mean, that's really the end goal. Okay, so that's why it matters. And I appreciate that because I do think that's maybe where part of the fear and the disconnect comes from is how we view this as either a tool and an augment, a enhancement versus a replacement.
And I think you can add on to that too. And you know, let's be honest, so many of our colleagues are feeling burnt out about a system that sort of uses and abuses them. So one more thing to do is not on everyone's favorite to-do list. I got to learn one more thing. I got to add one more tool to my toolbox. And you know, you factor in that, and this is something we talk about, those of us in tech that we talk about is as psychologists, as people, we're trained not to do anything until we know how to do it, right? We're not necessarily taught to play and experiment. And, you know, you talk about evidence-based practice, right? Like, you don't get to do CBT until you prove that you know what CBT is or that you shouldn't use these things until you take a test, right? And there is no test for a lot of this stuff. There is no, and that you always see people, oh, is there certification programs and stuff like that? And I'm kind of like, no, you just got to play with it. It's new. You don't need that. You don't need anybody's permission. And so getting over that fear, I think, as a field is important for us.
Well, so, I mean, for those who are maybe jumping in then, those who are kind of playing and exploring and trying it out, like, how is it being used? And I'm not necessarily saying what's the right way to use it yet. We'll get there. But like, how is generative AI being used perhaps by other mental health providers, psychologists, social workers, you know, folks like that?
I see a couple different common ways. The most common way is notes, right? That I think is everybody's maybe first experience with some of this is a lot of the platforms that either claim to write your notes for you or, you know, if you work in, you know, different settings, they'll rewrite your notes so that you can maximize your billing or what have you, right? There is that. I think that can be good, right? Where it lets you focus more on, you know, being present with the client and not having to keep track of everything. I think it's still kind of tough because a question we get is, well, who's liable for that? And if I'm liable and I still have to review everything the AI does that really save me any time?
Sure.
But and then you go on like, but another positive is if you're a training director or you're a site supervisor, if you have consistently coded notes for every interaction, that AI can then take those notes and allow you to assess for quality. What's your adherence to evidence-based practice? There's companies that are doing this sort of, if I take all of your notes, what can I give back to you? So there is like that quality piece. There's a company called Upheal that does a post-session dashboard of you talked this much, client talked this much. Here was the semantic analysis of what we said. You know, use this many happy words, sad words. There are other companies that let you query your notes. So you come back from vacation and you're picking back up with a client. You're like, where did we left off? Or they just mentioned this person that I think came up 6 months ago. Who is this? Right. And so that to me, again, helps me be a better therapist and augments my practice. So I think that's going to be the most common way that most therapists are going to get introed into it. The second is, you know, some of that report writing, or again, even like engaging with it. One of the first things I did was take some old psych data that I had and dump it into ChatGPT, and I was like, tell me about this patient. And it wrote a whole report for me. And so that's not great, but if you can, right? Like, so, okay, on the one hand, that's not good that it can do that. And it was pretty accurate. But then I go, okay, well, then what about if I am maybe a psychologist doing assessments? We're hard pressed to do more than like one assessment a day. Like, it's going to take you, even if you've got all your templates and you've got all your word stuff, you're going to crank out maybe one, two a day if you're like a real rock star. And you have to write those to the most common denominator, right? You have to write it for a medical audience, for schools, for parents, for the patient. And it just becomes this kind of amorphous mass. But what if you could write it once and then say, hey, ChatGPT, or hey, AI solution, write this into a school report for an IEP. Write this at a sixth grade reading level so that my client can understand it. Translate this into Hindi so that, you know, I don't necessarily speak the language, but the parents can understand it. That's all, again, st not stuff I can do and stuff that makes my clients better. And then I'll say the last way that I know some folks are experimenting with it is honestly is like a little bit of self-help and a little bit of supervision, right? Like it's somebody who's going to listen to you 24/7 and be present and always give you that kind of Rogerian positive regard of being able to say like, hey, you know, I you know, think what you're going through. If you're going through a particularly tough spot at work and you need something to vent, if you are, you know, trying to sort through your own things, I think I played around with one where I took a bunch of Irving Yalom and Rollo May books and like uploaded it. And then now it's like my existential therapist kind of thing. Or I've got a motivational bot that's like, hey, I don't want to do the thing. Can you motivate me to do the thing? And it'll tell me, like, well, remember, like, okay, cool. Like, it helps to self-reflect, that kind of stuff.
I'm thinking of a prompt. I have this colleague and he drives me crazy when I have to repeat something. No, I'm kidding. But I never
Who
really
are you
thought about
talking
it in the,
about?
I don't know, Kevin. So this brings us to a piece that's really important, and obviously something you're going to talk about in our pre-meeting institute. As you said that, I was both fascinated, excited, and then at the end when we were talking about like it can sort of reflect back things to you, and it's not serving as a therapist, but can motivate you and do these things. This is where the ethical stuff comes into play, and we hear the terrible stories and the when AI went wrong and it gave really bad advice. And so, I know we're going to spend 3 hours in our PMI talking about ethics and everything that's changing in our behavioral health world, but how do we ethically use AI in mental health? And this is totally unfair because like this is like the 3 minute answer, and I know this is like a 1 day lecture, but what would you say to that?
The 3 minute answer is we have done all of this before and we already have all the tools in our toolbox, right? I think, Kevin, you and I both worked with folks in the past who've gone through the very traditional telehealth, like back in like, oh, we started using telephones to deliver things to patients. And it's like, oh, can you possibly build up, a relationship with a person over a telephone? Is that ethical? Oh my goodness. Right. Like the Alexander Graham Bell level of panic, and we think about that as like cute and quaint, and nobody questions that today, but they had the
We
same
did.
discussions that we have. And I think a lot of what we already have in the ethics code for our various, professional bodies can help drive a lot of this. There was a great article we'll talk about more during the conference by Tiffany Chenoville that basically kind of like crosswalks the ethical code with, hey, these are these principles. These are the questions you need to think about when it comes to AI, right? It's beneficence and non-maleficence, right? Like, so then how do we ensure that Gen AI doesn't harm consumers and benefits psychology as and society as a whole? How do we address the misuse of our own clinical work and teaching? Like, kind of like I was talking about that report writing. Like, how do we address that? How do we kind of come together? So, like, it's about taking all of the guiding ethical principles and standards and just kind of taking a step back and going, hey, how do I actually apply them in this situation, like we do in so many other situations?
We've been here before and we'll be here again. And that's, I think that is very reassuring. And I appreciate that stance.
Absolutely.
And given that, I guess one of my questions is, or like, what are some of the pitfalls? Like, what are some of those areas that, because I, one, as Jenna was talking about, she had her reactions as you were describing that. I had some of mine too, like, about with writing reports, for example. My question immediately was, well, gosh, how secure is this private health information that I may be dumping into ChatGPT or something similar
Of
to it,
course.
to generate some reports? Like, where's that data going? How is that, or is not being protected? Like, how do we, we do absolutely, like you said, we have ethical requirements with handling this data and other kinds of things. And how do we, what are the pitfalls we need to be careful about? And I think by knowing the pitfalls, that also maybe gives us a little bit of reassurance that not all of it is pitfalls, right?
Absolutely. And it is not something, again, like the way I think I talk about it, it's not something you use without a net, right? You need to have some kind of net, whether that is you looking at the output or you kind of thinking about those exact questions, Kevin. Like when I experiment with it, I make sure that anything I put into it is de-identified and that names are taken out, right? Or I'm just using a particular section and saying, I can't quite get this wording right. Can you help me word this better? Those kind of things I think are fine. But yeah, like talking about those sort of like green, red, yellow, red kind of use cases where, and this is something we talked about at the AI summit, especially when it comes to like research. And so when we think about, say, like research, where do we draw the line? TLDR, I don't think I have a good answer, but it is a good thought experiment to go through where, on one hand, you've got, I use ChatGPT to help write my R code because I don't quite understand. Like, I'm trying to get it to do this thing, or I'm trying to get this graph to look a certain way. And so I just have it kind of. I think 99% of people would be like, that's fine, right? Andy Field would be like, that's fine, to use your R code for that. But on the other extreme, we have, oh, it writes the entire journal article for me. Well, that's obviously bad, right? Like, so, okay, great. We've got sort of our extremes. How do we play in the middle? And where is that line for all of us is, I think, a conversation more departments and folks need to have with themselves.
Can you? I just want to. I know we want to move on in a minute to kind of pivot a bit, but could you say a little bit just for the folks that are going, well, gosh, why is that bad? Why is ChatGPT or something like it writing my journal article for me bad? Isn't it making up new stuff? I'm not taking other people's words.
I mean, in some areas, in some areas of science, I think that you can argue that it is a good thing, right? Like, I would say like protein science is really interesting in how they're using AI to come up with new molecules that have never existed or that would take you and I lifetimes to be able to sort through the data and come up with stuff. I think for us, it really comes down to, and I think this is part of the larger question of how we use AI as a society, whether it's in work, in our personal lives, in dating? Like, where do we draw the line between what is the self I want to present to the world? What is my authentic self? And what is something else, right? It's the difference between, here's a generic Hallmark card, and here is something I took the time to like write out, right? One means a lot more. One helps people understand and builds up that connection a lot more. And for psychologists, like, there can be really serious consequences for your professional, reputation, for your, legal liabilities if you put something out that you haven't screened, right? I have nightmares about people, getting in court and being read back a transcript of their report where it's clearly obvious, although I'm a large language model, I cannot say this. And then being like, did you review this before you sent it and entered it in as evidence? And like, yeah, that has serious ramifications.
Well, and even when we think about where is this coming from, like we said, like it's a nice predict the next word or fill in the blank thing, but where's that coming from? It's coming from all the stuff that trained it, right? Which is oftentimes written by somebody else. And so it may be generating content for you that is, I mean, more or less plagiarized from somebody else's work. And, and so there is that risk. So we got to be thoughtful. Maybe that's a better best word. Thoughtful about, like, in what ways are we using it? How are we presenting the output as far as, is it our stuff? Is it somebody else's? Because even unintentionally, inadvertently, we could be plagiarizing in some applications.
And it's dumb, right? Like
Yes.
it's smart in a lot of ways, but it's also dumb, right? Like you see articles about it getting citations wrong, it making up whole papers
Yes.
out of cloth, right? So that's what I mean about when I talk about like working with a net. Like you can't just let it go nuts. You have to supervise, you have to be that sort of higher level reasoning center. Does this make sense?
Well, and I think that actually brings us to the next point, which is, how do we add value? How do psychologists add value in the age of generative AI? Like, where should we be stepping in? What kind of opportunities are there for us to look toward? Let's get away from all this negative stuff. How do we make good? And
How we
where
do
can
good?
we grow? How do we do good, and how can we get better? Like, what are the opportunities?
I think this is still something we're all trying to figure out. And again, we wrestled with a lot at the APA of how do we show the value of psychologists in the age of AI when everybody can spin up their own AI, quote unquote, therapist, or have an AI girlfriend rather than pursuing real relationships. How do we demonstrate our value? I think that's something as a field we all need to discuss. And at the same time, I don't know if we worry a lot about psychics, right? But and AI is kind of the same, right? It can tell people what they want to hear, but it's not going to tell them what they need to know. I think, you said, we as a people are really great at anthropomorphizing things. We're meaning making creatures. We can impart intention and emotion where there really isn't any. But for me, it's I always think about how do we incorporate tech, and again in a way that is beneficial. For me, I think about it as like the exocortex, the part of our brain that lives outside of us, right? Like nobody remembers anybody's phone numbers anymore. It's all on this. It's all on your phone, like email addresses, what am I doing? Like all this stuff is outside of our brains. And I think AI can be one of those things. Again, imagine a world where you can get immediate supervision and review on every single patient of somebody coming in and being like, wow, you talked a lot. Like, what's going on with you about that? And being able to kind of self-reflect after everything or see all of this data in aggregate across your entire, not only a single patient, but multiple patients, and help you reflect on that as a psychologist. Like, that's not something we can do without tech. Like,
That's
that's crazy.
fascinating.
It occurs to me too that we can be part of that training. Like we could choose to say like, hey, AI is this thing and it's suspect and we're weirded out by it. So you all do AI over there. We're gonna do psychology over here. And then what's training AI and developing AI and kind of moving it forward isn't we're not involved in that. And it's like it's here. It's not going away. How do we best be part of that so that it's trained and evolves and, turns into something that, again, we as mental health providers, whatever our field may be, we can feel good about that it's helpful and not off track. Like I think about the time that David and I worked at the National Center for Telehealth and Technology together a little bit. We overlapped a little bit. And it was this great marriage of technology experts and mental health experts working together to develop products. Whereas we also probably can all list off a whole bunch of apps or other technologies that were like, it was clear there was a huge divorce between the coders and the mental health experts, right? And so there's this opportunity to be part of that solution, like help it evolve into something useful and accurate and ethical and all of those good things.
And I think that is such an important point that I want to underscore because, regardless, I think, of how we all feel individually about this current moment, our economic system, whatever is going on, I think a unfortunate fact of reality is if somebody can do something, they will, right? Like if I can make an AI therapist, quote unquote, and put that out there for people to use, I'm gonna do it. And somebody might stop me, but the damage will already have been done, right? So then it becomes so much more important for us to have a seat at the table, like you said, about how these things get built, to call out bad behavior when we see these companies. Like nobody even has a mental health background at that company. You're all ex McKinsey guys or whatever. Like you just decided to do this thing. Like that's not cool. And call that behavior out. And again, come at this as a collective rather than, kind of trying to just have it be imposed upon us.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
And you really do, in my cyber stalking of you have sort of really been a pioneer and out in the front with this field. And we're going to get to actionable intel in just a minute, which is sort of that, again, things we want people to walk away with. But as you may also know, our theme this season is Who's Got Your Six? And as you're out here in front, trying to, be there on the ethics committee and move this stuff forward and answer the, big questions of the field, I feel like this is an important one for you. Who we have this theme because we want to reinforce to our providers, like, you gotta have people that have your six. Like, going it alone in our field is really not so fun. So it could be personal, professional. We ask you don't say names because you're just going to make people mad if you don't mention them in your speech, but your acceptance speech. But what's your sick story?
No, I always view kind of where I am as, that quote of standing on the shoulders of giants, right? Like I can see further because somebody lifted me up. Somebody, whether it's my many supervisors, the peers I have in like groups like Therapists in Tech or the APA, where I can come together, I can build these relationships with folks who have done amazing things. I can learn from them, and then I can take and either help somebody else learn that. I think one of the impetus for us was for starting Therapists in Tech was a lot of us working in digital health. Students used to say, "Well, how can I do what you're doing?" I'm like, "I don't know. I'm doing a job that didn't exist when I was in graduate school. I fumbled my way here. Here's how I did it." And so a lot of us, like, that was important to pass on to the next generations, that people didn't have to make the same mistakes and do those kind of things. So I think all of the community of folks coming around this, I think that is having each other's six is, I think, a crucial component of at least the folks I know working on the digital side of this, because we're all in some ways kind of, again, working without a net. To go back to my other metaphor of, we've never done this before. We're figuring this out. It's important to have those relationships to be able to be candid and go, did I screw up? Is this okay? Should we do it this way? And then hearing, no, actually that was bad, and go, oh no, how do I fix it? Right? Like, and having that kind of community and relationship, I think is super important.
It
So
sounds like
true.
you've created those community. I mean, you've really created those communities, those opportunities to connect and not go this alone. So that's great.
This has been exciting, and I'm looking forward to the EBP conference where you'll present.
Oh,
I'm looking
absolutely.
forward to ongoing relationship and connection and conversation too. It's been so great having you here. Thank you for coming.
No.
Really, how we end every episode, like what kind of, few things, two, three things can our listeners take away
You
from
bet.
this episode today and apply in their lives right now that they can use? Like, what actionable intel items do you have for us?
I think it most tech, and again, I know there are people who are very technologically phobic, anti-technology. I understand that. Because most tech is, well, I just got to play with it. I got to like find
Right.
some time to see what this can do. So let me give you and your audience maybe a couple actionable things that I think trying with something like ChatGPT so that you can see, okay, this is what it does for this. Can like this is a low level risk that's actually useful. So like let's say, somebody, your boss emails you and says, "Hey, I'm going to need you to start sending me an email summary of the five things that you did last week,"
Hypothetically.
right? Hypothetically, that's a thing that you or your audience might have to deal with. You can actually just open up ChatGPT, talk to it like I'm talking with you, tell it what you did last week, and then say, "Hey, can you turn that into five bullet points that make me look really good?" Copy paste it
Yeah.
in your email, right? Automate the boring stuff. Like that's what I'm trying to push a lot of AI to do is how do we help eliminate all the stuff that isn't therapy? Like rather than focus on let's replace the therapist, let's eliminate all the stuff that's not therapy that we all hate to do.
Yeah.
Right. CE questions, right? Like if you gotta do CE questions, right? You can upload your presentation and go give me some suggestions. Need to generate a form letter, right? A insurance claim, denial or challenge or whatever. Great. It's perfect for that. It'll save you hours of trying to come up with that stuff on your own. Try it with an IEP or something like something you don't normally write that you have to, oh, let me try explaining this to the patient, like rather than using like, well, Broca's area is affected and this, and you got a full scale score on the waist and blah, blah, blah. Like, hey, dumb that down. Like, how can I explain this in like a handout format? See what you get. I think all of that, helping a patient understand medical issues that are maybe even outside of your scope, but affect them psychologically, right?
Yeah.
Like how diabetes can help like affect depression and sleep and things like that. All of those things are super useful, like low risk kind of ways to get your toes into the water of AI.
Maybe it's reassuring to know too that if the output isn't something that you feel good about, you don't have to use it, you know?
Exactly. Right. You can tweak it. You can edit
Yeah.
it. You can even say, make it, oh, that's not quite right. I wanted it more like this. Have it
Yeah.
do it again. It's not going to complain. Just have it do it an infinite number of times until it gets it right.
It's such a low risk thing to play with. And I going back to what you said before, we as a profession, as a, if we think of behavioral health culture, we're not, this is against our sort of culture where we need to have supervision and training and this and approvals and certificates. So, permission to play. There's no downside to it. I'm gonna throw out actionable intel, which is check out therapists in tech. I think it's
Yeah, please.
really cool. I joined. I'm a
Same.
2025 member, 2024. I don't know. But
That's
anyway,
perfect.
just the community of folks who are grappling with these things, and I have just learned a lot in the message rooms or in the self-promotion areas. So we'll put the link to that in the show notes, but.
And it's all only clinically trained people, right? We have everybody from founders all the way down to grad students, but it's important for us that it's just clinically trained folks. Like we take a broad lens to that, but I don't want scammy CEOs or VCs in there kind
Right,
of
right.
pitching somebody. It's like, no, this is us. This
Yeah.
is community for us. And it's, 3 to 4,000 of us internationally talking about all this stuff, folks who are interested in this.
Well, and like Jenna said, we'll have links and all the, references and resources that have been mentioned in the show notes. And then any others too, David, if you
Yeah.
want to add to them, we'll put those in the
Pop
show
them
notes for
in.
folks as well.
Love to. I've got a great list of links about learning about AI and like how it works. There was another group I was in that put together this laundry list of resources for folks to learn more. So I'll include that as well.
Fantastic.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. We've been wanting to sit down and chat with you for a while, and we had to push it back. That was on us. But we're so glad that we got to sit and talk to you today, and
Worth the wait.
we're really looking forward to your presentation coming up in May. So thank you so much, David Cooper, for talking with us today on Practical for Your Practice.
Thanks
And
for coming.
Kevin, yeah, thanks for co-hosting. I got a word in edgewise every once in a while, so that was good.
Okay,
That was good.
good.
It's tough.
With your T2 reunion, but anyway, and for all you out there, thank you for taking a listen, and we hope you listen again. And as always, stay curious.
And mind your EBPs. Bye, everyone. Remember, we love hearing from our listeners, so leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send us an email. Both can be found in our show notes. Our theme music is Failed Attempts by Nitro, and our administrative assistant is Bree Mercer.
Thanks for listening to Practical for Your Practice.
If you like what you're hearing, please feel free to follow us, rate this episode, and share it with others.
Until next time.